Welcome to today's telecast, which is a World Health Organization telecast supported by Clean Care is Safer Care. And it's the final telecast, educational telecast, Weber training telecast in the International Lecture Series on Infection Prevention and Control. And it's my pleasure today to host this session. I'm Lance Jennings, clinical virologist from Canterbury Health in Christchurch, New Zealand. And it's my pleasure to present the presenter, Professor Wing Hong Seto. Now, Professor Seto is a veteran teleclass presenter. He has presented twice in the past year, in 2011, and he is a person who's played a key role in initiating infection control in Hong Kong and has started training courses for infection control practitioners way back in 85. So he's been extensively involved in infection control education throughout China and the Asia-Pacific region for a number of years. And he has a number of honorary and other positions, but is currently Chief of Microbiology and Infection Control in the Queen Mary Hospital in Hong Kong. And without further ado, Professor Seto is going to talk to us about new developments in renal dialysis today. So welcome, Professor Seto.
Yes, thank you. It's my pleasure. And it's amazing how time flies. And again, we have finished a series, and this is the last one. So welcome, and hello to all those who are tuning in. I know it's hard work, it's not easy listening, but we'll try to make some fruitful, we'll try to get some real benefits from this session. Now, again, as introduced, I'm from Hong Kong, and we are just entering into our winter season, almost, and the last 2 weeks has been miserable, all rain all the time. But fortunately, we have not got any strong typhoon up to now. Now, straight away to the topic. And it is titled renal dialysis, but basically, I only have time to touch on hemodialysis. So the other things like peritoneal dialysis, I will not touch on. Even on hemodialysis, I would have to be very brief and just to touch, hopefully, on a few salient points. Now, my focus is very much speaking as someone in a routine infection control unit, whereby we have to look after infection control for the entire hospital or clusters of hospitals. And then in most major tertiary centers or even just a major large general hospital, you do have dialysis units and often at least machines. And the main focus of my talk today is to encourage all you infection control colleagues around the world to get involved with this. Now, one big problem, of course, and even for myself, to be very honest, when I walked into the dialysis unit, and especially if they have a very advanced teaching or tertiary unit, you get sort of you get confused and you feel humiliated because you do not know at all what all these machines are about. And to be honest, many of us, including myself, as my background is really internal medicine, infectious disease, clinical microbiology, honestly, I have never run these machines before in my life. And so therefore, sometimes you can get sort of confused and you feel that you know nothing, and therefore we tend not to get involved at all. Now, my encouragement to you is really to get involved, especially when there are now new guidelines and new developments that the infection control personnel, especially when we are well linked to the laboratory, can really help them. And we will form a very useful sort of a piece for the whole process. Now, hopefully, as I share, I would again emphasize, I'm no expert in renal dialysis machine or hemodialysis machine. And even if I'm an expert, I will tell you there's so much development going on that within maybe even a few months or a year, you're out of date, because there are a host of big companies all over the world inventing new gadgets and gimmicks and so on, that we are out of date. So therefore, I'm speaking from the perspective of someone in the infection control unit, how to liaise and link with them and make yourself useful. Okay? Now, also in particular, there are new guidelines recommended by AMI. Okay? And in fact, this will be my second slide. Just click to the second slide. This is the American National Standard. And AMI stands for Association for the Advancement of Medical Instrumentation. Now, they make these guidelines basically setting standards, microbiology standards. And in fact, I'm sure you know that all these machines, all these renal dialysis units, is supposed to routinely culture their fluids and water on a regular basis. Now, they have come out with new standards, and I hope in the process to explain the reason for these new standards. And we in infection control should really be well-versed with it. And because if you are not, then you cannot help them, and plus they think that you are way behind time and you are not relevant to their unit. So hopefully this talk will help us all to update, and you may already be updated, so no big deal. Now, one more point I want to make before we move directly on is, I'm speaking from Hong Kong, and we are not obligated to follow these standards. In fact, there are also European standards, which are even stricter than the AMI standards. And so, it is quite important that you sit down with your renal team and decide. Now, a key word in this is to be consistent. Because if you opt for the more sophisticated machines or fluids, they are sophisticated because they are more expensive, but also because they are purer. Then you should abide by the purer standards. Even though sometimes there are no proof that these purer fluids or these new machines are effective yet. But if you're going to buy those machines and use those fluids, then I think it should be consistent. You should then abide by the new microbiology standards. I don't think it is correct to say, well, since there's no proof, we'll use these new fluids and machines, but do not follow their routine recommendations procedure. Okay? So this is one, is a very important point, and that is why if you have never met your renal dialysis unit team and never sat down and talked to them or know the machines, it's time to get involved, okay? You will find that they will find you very useful, and if you make regular checks, even on the simple things which I will cover, like hand hygiene and wearing of gloves, you know, you will find that compliance can be very low. And then you help them and educate them, they will find you a blessing, you know. They would flip, I tell you. So I will make these suggestions to you. Anyway, let's move on. Now, next one, the next slide, which is slide number 3, there's the word summary there. So I hope you're on the same page. I show you this is basically, it is not put in actual form, but this is basically the content, the index, content index of the AMI standards. But I think it does give us a chance to see what it covers. Now, in the renal dialysis unit, there are actually 3 big things. They use water, because water is used to dilute the dialysis fluid. So they use water. And the water must be processed. Now, I know that in some third world countries, even now, maybe not third world, even maybe quite developed countries, they don't process the water at all. Okay? That's no good. Okay? It should be processed. And I assume that most renal units are already doing that. So the water needs to be processed, but there are many, many controversies too. How should they be processed? By what method? You know? So we can go on and on, but number one, the water. So as you can see here in this table, we would dialysis water. All right? Now then you have the fluids. Okay? And the fluids are mixed with the water. But down here, of course, there are 2 more lines. I hope you are with me. One is the ultra pure dialysis fluid. Now, this is what is coming on board, and I'll explain very quickly now. I will explain again when we come to the relevant slide. Now, why ultra pure dialysis fluid? Well, as you know, in renal dialysis, we have a dialyzer, which basically is a membrane. The kidney is knocked off or sort of sick, so we use an artificial kidney, as we say. Now, we have a membrane, and on one side is the patient's blood. On the other side is the dialysis fluid. And we found that those unwanted solutes or particles in the patient's blood then move out into the dialysis fluid. And then the patient feels better, all right? Now, they then found that if you make the membrane pores bigger, they call it high flux. Okay, if you make the membrane pores bigger, the solutes, even big solutes, big particles, come out, you see? In the older days, when the membrane has pores that are much smaller, many of these bigger particles do not come out. Now, I'm no expert. To prove that, I don't even remember what all the different bigger particles. I don't need to. I just need to know the concept that now with high flux, the pores are bigger, and the bigger solute waste particles can now evolve out. Okay? Now, apparently they have done studies that with this high flux membrane, the patient has much better quality of life. But of course, with a high flux membrane, then there is a bigger chance for the dialysis fluid to contain the patient's blood. Because the holes are much bigger. That's common sense, right? You know? And that is why you need new standards to make sure that your fluid, your dialysis fluid and the water are much cleaner. Because now you are passing it through a system where the membrane has bigger holes. We'll do it bluntly, all right? Now, what is ultra-pure? Well, then someone said, hey, why don't we make some dialysis fluid that is really pure? It's not sterile, but quite close. Then, even with these high flux bigger holes, no problem. Okay? So, therefore, they start using this ultra-pure dialysis fluid. And now, if you use those ultra-pure dialysis fluid, the standard even get higher. You want to make sure that they remain ultra-pure. And they're quite taxing, those standards. So, as I said in my introduction, if your unit decides to use the ultra-pure, then they should follow the ultra-pure standards. Even though in the field of hemodialysis, there's still some debate. Do you need ultra-pure? You see? Does it? Yes, it's much more expensive. Does it all that help the patient? Well, we in infection control, I personally don't get involved with this debate. I just allow the renal unit to decide. If they want to use ultra-pure, then they should follow the ultra-pure standard, which I will show you quite soon. If they decide no, then of course you don't need to. You see, it's up to them. Now, finally, under the ultra-pure is this online. Now, what is this online? Again, they now come out with a new process called hemofiltration or hemodiafiltration. Now again, I'm no expert. Don't ask me exactly what this is. I just know that this is a new process in which loss of fluid are lost. So it's no more the old dialysis membrane. In this new hemofiltration or hemodiafiltration, large volumes. In fact, 5 to 10 liters are lost in every session. Hey, there's a whole volume of blood in the body. And they need to be replaced. Now, I still remember in the old days when we started, we used to have lots of IV fluid. We have to pour this IV fluid in, like opening a tap into the patient. But now, they come up with very, very fine filters so that the fluid get return to the patient IV online. They call it substitutional fluid. And all these special high-power filters can be bought. Now, the important point also to note is that there is no way we can culture this fluid because we just trust the manufacturer that the ultra filter is working, that all these fine filters is working. I have a picture to show you later. But at the moment, there is no standards done because the demand is that this is very, very close to sterile. And it's difficult to culture it at the moment in the lab. So we just trust the manufacturer. Now, so therefore on this last line, or we call online prepared substitutional fluid, I move on to a very important point, record keeping. So for instance, as I said, for online substitutional fluid, we can't culture. Therefore, keep your record very carefully when you give to the patient. You see, the batch, the numbers, so that if there is a problem, you can track it back to when it was given, the batch, and so on, so that you can then communicate with the manufacturer. Now, in fact, even in Hong Kong, not many hospitals, but online is already done in some hospitals. You know, so all this ultra pure, all this is already done in many hospitals, and we have to be up to date and make sure all this is happening. Now, down to record keeping. So I would suggest infection control unit to get involved. And as I say, you have the issue of the water, you have the issue of the fluids. Now the third big thing is the machines, which is under the next title, other recommendations. Now, but let me stress the point now. In many of these water and fluid and machines, yes, there is microbiology control where you culture them. But the microbiology control is just one small part. Of course, since we are linked to the lab, we must make sure that it is observed and kept and that the culture is done properly. But having said that, do make sure that all other recommendations, for instance, the process of the water, it depends on what your hospital decides to use. Now there are many new filters. Many of them use reverse osmosis, you know. Now, some use UV light, for instance. Now, it depends. It varies. It doesn't matter. I don't get involved in the debate. But once they get involved in a system, they will always have manuals. And those manuals have to be read very carefully, identifying the routine, either parts that need to be changed, and other routine procedures, things that need to be read. Certain meters, you must read the meters and record them, temperatures and so on. Now make sure all those are identified, and then make sure that those who are reading it keep regular records. And the book is available to the infection control unit. So that when the nurse goes down to check, or the ICN goes down to check the unit, they can flip the book and to make sure that all these records are kept accordingly. So all these are kept, and of course the microbiology part, you should play a strong part since you are linked to the lab, and I will come to that later. Now, other recommendations. Then you have the machines. And in the AME guide, they give you some tips, like the plan, the installation, the operational qualifications, performance qualifications, and routine monitoring of the machines. Again, we are no experts. But all machines that are bought has a manual, as I said. And they will have some recommendations telling you what exactly to do. Again, make sure that these records are kept well and available open to the infection control nurse when they do their usual surveillance. All right. Now, quality management, of course. Free quality, again, all this, you need to read the manual and get their definite routine recommendations and read them and make sure that they are followed. Then finally, the microbiology control. In fact, this is very important. I will spend, in fact, the next 15 minutes talking about it. The cultures and so on. This is where you need to play a big part as infection control personnel, because you are linked to the lab. And we'll talk on this very soon. The environment, of course. Now, we have guidelines, and I will show you some later on, especially the CDC, but there are other guidelines that talks about good environmental cleaning, you see, and you can read them. Now, especially, you must understand that the whole renal dialysis unit is a unit that has lots of water and blood. So therefore, you and I know in infection control, these are big risk factors. And so make sure that the environment is kept clean, especially frequently touched areas. All right? And any blood, with due respect, all blood spills and spillages must be cleaned properly. Now, then personnel. In fact, in all manuals and so on, it's recommended that personnel must be given education. And again, records of all these education should be kept. And the ICN, when you review, you should review this too. Now, it should not be such a thing that a new staff join the unit with no education, he can deploy without supervision. That must not be allowed. So this is very crucial. Now, so this summary already summarized some of the things that you can do. And again, we are no experts, but what the manual recommends for regular routine monitoring, you should comply and observe. Okay, now, the next slide, of course, is a picture of patients. You know, usually now with the new machines, in the old days, many of these dialysis machines recirculate. But now we use what we call single pass. Fluid goes in and it goes out. That's it. In fact, I would say that if your unit is still not using single pass and change all the single pass, they should aim towards that. Because all new machines are single pass. Don't recirculate, and they are much better. The chance of recontamination and, in fact, maintenance is so much easier. But here you are, the patient sits there, as you can see. Next day is the machine, and they are there usually for a session. Nowadays, one morning or one afternoon, that's all they need. You know, in the old days, they used to sit there for a day or even more, right? Now, then the next slide is just a diagram. And as you can see, now right in the center is, you see the word dialyzer. That is the artificial kidney, all right? And inside this is the membrane. Yes, you know. Now, then you have the water. And more, as I said, people are having new tricks to process the water. Okay? Deionizing and bicarbonate and so on. Again, we are no experts. They can use whatever they want. But once they use the system, make sure they are following the routine recommendations of making of monitoring. Now then, of course, you have the concentrate, the pump, it goes in. And so it goes into the dialyzer. It's in blue. Now, it goes into the dialyzer, and the other part, of course, is the patient's blood. And the best, really, is to have an AV fistula. Now, they usually do that in most units for long-term patients. But if you're new, or maybe for a while the fistula may not be working, then you may have to deal with a line. But the IV fistula is the best. So this will bring the blood. It drains the blood, okay, from the arterial side, goes to the dialyzer, as you can see here. Then it removes the solutes, unwanted solutes. Then it goes back to the patient, okay, on the venous side. So this is what happens. We all know that. Now, again, there are many new machines, and it's worthwhile to always read those manuals when they come. Now, the dialysis fluid then goes out, and this is in green. It goes out, and it goes out to the outlet, all right? And, of course, then it is disposed. Now, the next slide, just to show you the machine. If you look at the slide on the right, it's just an example. This is where the water comes, all right? Again, don't expect your machines in your hospital to look like this. There are so many different machines. But know that there is a water part. Now, always keep in your mind the three parts. The water, the dialysate, with the distribution system, all right? The dialysis set needs a whole series of plastic tubes, usually, to distribute the dialysis fluid, okay? Now, so you have the water. This is the one on the right. Now, then on the left is the machine. If you look at the machine, it's green background, right? You can see that. But at the bottom is a sort of a bottle. And this is the dialysis set, okay? As you can see, from the dialysis is a series of plastic tubes that brings it out and then goes on to the pump. You see, the pump is the thing that's sort of like a fan on the upper right top part of the green panel. Okay, that is the pump. Then it goes to the dialysis, the artificial kidney. Now, all those tubes with red is the patient's blood. So, therefore, as it passes through the dialyzer, it gets cleaned up. Now, so it's wise to really go to your renal unit and ask those renal nurses to point out to you, hey, show me the water, you know, and where does it come out in the machine? Show me the machine and the dialysis, you know, the second part, the dialysis and the diffusion pipes and the dialyzer, you see? I'm going to show you all this so you are familiar with it. It's not that difficult. Keep the three things in mind. Water, dialysis and the distribution pipes, and the machine, all right? That's all you need to know. Okay, now, so there are several things I want to emphasize today. There are new standards for fluids, microbiology standards, which I really want to put to you. And I will also then, the second bullet point, show to you that the most common infection is vascular access infection. So since we have lack of time, we'll just focus on how to prevent those. And yes, hepatitis C. Now, hepatitis B is already well known. And just a quick word, hepatitis B is now still clearly mandated that they have their own machines. That you should not share a machine if there's a hepatitis B patient, his machine should not be used for other patients. Okay? And in fact, dialyzers, now we tend to use disposable ones. We use it once, that's it. But there are hospitals that are still reprocessing those. But even if you allow reprocessing, you must not use it for hepatitis B. Okay? So hepatitis B is crucial. In fact, we now know how to prevent hepatitis B. And if you do it well, you should never even have a single case of infection in your unit. You know? It's not easy, but it can be done. All right? Now, the big thing is hepatitis C. And I picked this out because it is newer. And plus, we had an outbreak not too long ago, and I have some personal experience. So I will share our experience with you. Okay, moving on. Now, water, as I say, the first big thing. Again, you have all kinds of new things. Softener, filters, deionizer, reverse osmosis. Now, all those are around for a long time. But now they have ultra filters, UV light. Debatable. So all this water treatment is to remove unwanted chemicals, bacteria, and any endotoxins. As you know, for renal patients, they may have pyogenic attacks, in which is because of the endotoxin. There's no bacteria, but they have fever. And that is why for all fever, you should still take a blood culture. And if the blood culture remains persistently negative, we call it a pyogenic attack. That means it's not infection, but still it should be recorded, and it could be the endotoxin level is too high, okay? Now, again, if you go to the back of the room, you see something like on the top right hand, water treatment. It goes in and you have all these, next slide, big tubes. What do we know, right? Don't worry, again, as I say, don't be intimidated. They have manuals for all of this. And again, find out what are the recommended regular monitoring. All right? So, whatever they use, and in fact, this other machine is the reverse osmosis. Now, the reverse osmosis is very much to remove unwanted ions so that the water is pure enough for the renal dialysis. Most units, I would say, use it. Okay? But again, it varies. Some units prefer some other systems, and the other, this is the particulate filters on the left. And now there are also ultra filters, okay? So there's no end. many new machines are coming on board, and especially if your hospital is new, they're starting a new unit, the salespeople will give them all kinds of new ideas, all right? And there's no end. We often don't enter into those debates, as I say, but make sure that they follow the routine monitoring, all right? That's crucial. Okay, now, then, this is very important. We are worried about bacteria for us, infection control, and the endotoxin. And these are the list of bacteria. It can be anything. Any bacteria under the sun can cause an infection outbreak. Of course, the more common ones are those that grow well in water. But the mycobacterium is important. The next slide, please. The moat or the non-TB mycobacteria. Now, this is important also because the dialyzers in the old days, when they are reused, and even now many units are reusing it, they use formaldehyde to disinfect them, the most common method. And they now find that many of these mycobacterium are resistant to 2% formaldehyde. And even if you use a higher concentration, say 4%, it needs a long time, hours, maybe a day. And so, if your unit is still using formaldehyde to disinfect, regularly disinfect dialysis, watch out for this. You know, of course, if you're already throwing them away, in fact, in Hong Kong, many of our hospitals don't disinfect anymore. We throw it away. You know, we use disposable ones. And, well, I suppose Hong Kong is wealthy enough to do that. But you can reuse them. It's okay, except for hepatitis B patients. The present favorite method of disinfection is parasitic acid. So if you're not using parasitic acid, do read up on that and find protocols. Because formaldehyde, there are reports of outbreak of mycobacterium for formaldehyde. Okay, now, so, as I mentioned earlier, because extracorporeal treatment, which is the artificial kidney, has now used what they call high flux membrane. In this membrane, the pores, as I explained earlier, is 5 to 10 times bigger than the old ones. So the dialysis fluid needs to be purer because with bigger holes, contamination is easier. All right? Now, so because of this, the demand for purity, and also because of other things like bicarbonate, the standard has changed. Now, this is just a diagram. So on the left is the conventional dialyzer. On the right is the high flux. And I will tell you, most units are using the high flux one now. The high flux, as I mentioned before, has bigger pores, 5 to 10 times bigger. And you should know this. In fact, if you have not done it, walk to your renal unit, you know, walk to your renal unit and ask them, are you using the high flux? Now, I would tell you that many renal units are using both because some machines still demands the conventional. We call it low flux, right? So, at least you should know. Are you using a high flux? Which machine? Now, also don't be surprised if all of them are high flux, especially if your unit are the newer ones, all right? So, you should know all this. High flux is put here, you know, and high flux patient tends to have more frequent pyogenic reactions. Although, of course, there are units that report that if they do it carefully, it stays at the same rate. Okay? Now, the more important thing is, the next slide in blue, the more important thing is because of this high flux hemodialysis and what we call hemodifiltration or sometimes hemofiltration, we now have new microbiology standards. Okay? And now this is the hemodifiltration. So again, if your hospital is using hemodifiltration, let me again summarize. You have low flux, the conventional one. You have the high flux where the membrane is much bigger holes. Then you have this hemodifiltration or hemofiltration where large volumes of fluid are thrown out. All right? Then these are filtered. These fluids are filtered by an ultra filter, as you can see here, and it goes back into the patient. Now for this, we have no microbiology standards. because it demands such a high purity that the lab cannot do it, the usual lab. So we just have to trust the manufacturer promise. All right? So for this, colleagues, you have to keep good records when you give and so on. Now, anyway, it's good to go down to your unit and ask them, low flux, high flux, and are you using hemofiltration or hemodiafiltration? Okay? Now, the old standards. This is way back before they have high flux. And now this is, in fact, let me tell you, years and years ago, when I first started in infection control, we used to culture dialysis fluid, you know, before and after. Now we don't do that anymore, all right? We just culture once, okay? And it's recommended that you should do it monthly, all right? Now, there are many other regular, like for instance, how often should you disinfect the water distribution pipes? AMI has no standards. Some would like to do it, say it's minimum once a month. In fact, there are many who do it weekly. It's all right. All right? You decide. But whatever is the decision, make sure that records are kept and it is followed. Now, so let me summarize. For the distribution pipes, regular. Once a week to once a month. Minimum once a month. No standards in AMI. But for the dialysis machine, it should be daily. All right? Now, this is done by the renal unit. To monitor them, they have a microbiology monitoring and the slight AMI 204, this is the standard. Now, it is just counting colonies. Less than 200 for the water, less than 200 per ml for the dialysate, okay? And then, now, in this table, there is also the ultra pure and also the dialysate for infusion. But this is the old one. Now we look at the new one, which is 2011, all right? And it says here that in general, 4.12 is, now, I summarize everything below. It's easier for the read. Now, remember the old one is 200. For the new dialysis fluid standard, now, we don't care whether it's low flux or high flux now. Even if your unit is using the low flux or the conventional, this should be the standard that is now followed. It is now 100 colonies per ml. Okay? And you just count. It is quantitative. We don't have to ID those colonies. We just count them. Unless you have a cluster. When you have a cluster, then you should ID those colonies and even type them. Alright? Now, so back to here. For the present standards, for the fluid, the microbial count is now down to 100 CFU per ml. And the endotoxin level is now down to 0.5 EU per ml. So this is a new standard whether you use high flux or low flux. All right? This is quite important. And you should encourage your unit to follow this new standard. Now, in fact, our experience is that many of them have started using high flux and still following the old standard of 200. You know, you should be following the new standard of 100 now, which is recommended, all right? Now, this is quite important. You should also use the right culture medium. And they, as put here, it is tryptone glucose extra agar. Now, you cannot use chocolate agar or other agars. Use this because they have the right salt content. They have tested everything and found that, for instance, bicarbonate will grow bacteria that need more salt. And this has the right content. And you incubate them 17 degrees to 20 degrees. And the time is 7 days. All right? So it's long incubation, 17 to 20 degrees. And you must use what we call TGA. Very important. Now make sure your lab has all this. And they are not using their own favorite method or their own favorite agar. Again, let me emphasize, it is quantitative. You just count the colony. But when there is an outbreak, you must identify the organism. And also, if there is an outbreak, we, and I especially, will incubate some of, will incubate a specimen at body temperature, 37 degrees, all right? So you incubate more plates if there are outbreaks because you want to find the bacteria and make sure you know what it is. you may even have to go on to typing. All right? So anyway, I think this is quite clear. We move on. Ah, there you are. So this is, there are two standards. One for water and one for dialysate. Now you can see here, the water is less than 100, okay? And the endotoxin is 0.25 EU. I think it's quite clear. Now, let me do clear your mind and let me introduce another concept. They call it action level. You see there? Action level on the right of the table. Now, what in the world is this action level? Well, it's very simple. It's explained here. Now, incubation is 7 days. By the time you get the result, it may be a bit late. Okay? So, even when the result comes, and it's still sort of not above the level, as shown here, 100 CFU is not above 100 CFU, okay? But once you get it, it is only 50 CFU. So if you look at the standard, 50 CFU, you haven't crossed it yet. You have not crossed the 100 yet. But you still take action because by the time you make another specimen, if it crosses to 100, it's too late. So the action level is you take action. Now, what action do you take? Normally, you disinfect your system again. You know? Make sure that it's disinfected one more time. Following the manual as recommended, depending on what you use, do it one more time. And then take another specimen. And if it's below the action level, then you can relax. If it is above the action level, you should then do it again. But you do not have to stop dialysis. Okay? Now, if it's above the level, then you have to stop. And find out why. Make sure everything is okay before you allow the machine to be used again. Okay? So I think that is quite clear. The action level is now a thing you should implement and talk with your renal unit. Now, then, just now was the water. Now is the fluid. So you take a sample for the water and you take a sample for the fluid. And as shown here, the fluid is again same, less than 100 and 0.5, and that's the action level. Now, this slide, the next one, 4.13, just to mention about this ultra pure. I think I already told you, because of the high flux, they now think that you should make really pure fluid. Now, as I said, it's still debatable. These are more expensive, but if your unit decides to use ultra pure, then, next slide please, table 4, is the ultra pure standard. Okay? And as you can see, the ultra pure is as low as 0.1 CFU. I'll tell you, it is not easy to maintain this standard. But if you're going to use ultra pure in your unit, then you should follow it. Otherwise, why use ultra pure? You see? And the endotoxin level is in fact 0.03. Now, there are some studies, debatable because some feels that not enough controls, that shows that ultra pure leads to much lower complications, like amyloidosis and other complications. And therefore, especially for late stage renal failure, many of them like to use this, you know, it's better probably, okay? So, ultra pure dialysis fluid, as put below, and there's a lot of membrane filtration, and they require very, very strict standards. In fact, in Hong Kong, there are many units already using ultra pure. Interestingly enough, however, they are not following the new microbiology standards. You know? So it's almost self-defeating. Okay, now, back to the water. So where do you sample? Now, no time to read this complicated paragraph. Just to say that most of them use reverse osmosis now. So where the water returns to the reverse osmosis. Now, so for water is when the water returns to the reverse osmosis, but not in this paragraph. You may need additional samples if the system is such that there are different tubes bringing water to different equipment. Okay? Now, discuss this again with your renal unit. But if there is one whole system that returns the water to the RO system, that's where you take it. Okay. Now, one more thing is, how about the dialysis fluid? Well, usually you take it before they enter the dialysis machine or just after. Just remain consistent. One sample. That's all you need, all right? And then do the microbiology results. Now, very important, monthly monitoring. I underline that in red, all right? Monthly monitoring is most frequently adopted. So this is all very important, all right? Okay? Now, so, very quickly now, because we have very limited time left, the next slide is just to show you that the most common infection is vascular access, 57%. Okay? So, if you want to do anything, start a project. This is the most worthwhile. This is to show you the next slide is the burden of disease. In fact, the figure is 370,000 on hemodialysis in USA. Probably is now over 400,000. But there are more and more patients on renal dialysis. And in fact, in Hong Kong, almost all major hospitals, acute hospitals, have a unit. And so infection control can play a critical part. Now, the next is a histogram. As you can see, infection is lowest for fistula. So you should always put the patient on fistula, followed by the graft. Okay? Calf and non-calf catheter has a much higher rate. So don't use that. Use the fistula. Okay? Now this is a fistula. The next slide is the picture. Okay? So it's very easily done. In fact, your renal unit see this like every day. Okay? It's bread and butter. Okay? Now, then this is the calf catheter. Alright? In fact, you may find that they are producing all kinds of new catheters and, you know, new gimmicks and gadgets. Every time they have those, get a manual, read them, you know, and try to pick up the microbiology part, the infection control part. Now, important trends, just to show you that it's rising, but more important, just again to say that there's a new, not new, they have found that resistant bacteria is a new concern, it's a big concern, MDRO. So you should sit down with your unit and discuss about MDRO. Now, one new idea is that they found that for renal units, in fact, there are several papers that, yes, you must be very careful with MDRO, do your hand hygiene and so on, but you may not need single room isolation. There's a study showing that perhaps it's because renal patients don't stay in the hospital that long. Usually it's just a day, a session, and they go out. You may be able to deal with MDRO, even MRSA and VRE, without having to put them in single room isolation. All right? But you should discuss that very carefully and do monitoring of all MDROs. Okay, now, this is the prevention of vascular access. And very quickly, sterile techniques. Don't use the fistula for goodness sake, except for the dialysis. No, make sure every doctor knows that. Make sure the patients knows that. And tell the doctor, you know, for goodness sake. Now, this is just self-explanatory, so I'll just move on. The big thing I want to say is there is now a tendency towards bundle. So be up to date. This is just one slide. This is the bundle for vascular access. The next slide is to show you data that it works. Then there are other bundles. All right, CDC getting to zero. They are now coming out public, being published, many bundles for vascular access, and you should think of them, all right? Now, good infection control practices really will help. I'm sure you and I know we are in infection control for many years, and you and I know that wet water, blood, see? And this is where standard precaution can play a real vital role. Okay, now, the here is just to our final few words, hepatitis C, okay? And be careful. There are many literature. Read it up. Now, in fact, this is very important. There are four bullet points here. Those outbreak I just showed you earlier is because they don't do this, you know? So they don't change their gloves. They don't disinfect the skin. Believe it or not, it was true. And it's very important. Now, in our hospital, we have an experience. We have an outbreak of hepatitis C. You know, we have like 8 patients infected. and we checked everything. They did not share vials, did not share MPs, nothing. They don't share because we were quite strict and they listened to us. But then take a look at this slide here. Now you see the MPU of heparin, whereby they need to dilute it for use. There's a bag of salt water. And when they dilute this MPU, they use one single bag. So to cut a long story short, we did a case control study proving it. They contaminate the bag. So even though they don't share vials, the salt saline you use to dilute should also be single use if you want to avoid any trouble. Very important also is, you know where they dilute the heparin? This next slide. They dilute it in the dialysis ward with patients around. So if some patient calls the nurse, she will be running there, and before she know it, she may contaminate the dilution, which is exactly what happened. So we took this away, we move it away into another area, all right? So it's very important. Now, this next table is medication area. Patient 1, patient 2, patient 3. Very important. You know, the dirty stuff never goes back to the medication area. They do it once. Don't move. And there should be no transport or change of any equipment between patients. So look at the three bullet points. No return of supplies, no transfer of supplies, no mobile cup. That is very important. And yes, single dose vial. But be careful. Even things used to dilute those vials, you know, as our experience here in Hong Kong, was incriminated, causing an outbreak. All right, so that's very important. Medication vials, never reuse, never share, and even things that dilute it. One vial, one patient, no entry, no re-entry, no reuse. Now, so as I said, they were using it here. They were doing that procedure right there. So we take it out, no. And we put it to another room. This is where they do it now. No patients around. They don't move the patients. They do it once, hand hygiene before, after, and then give it to the patient for use. All right. Now, so other things. Transducers, you should always have, disposable transducers. The transducers are used to, now this is just one of the equipments, they used to measure the pressure. So all those recommended stuff, if you can use disposable, use it. Okay? And there's no time to go through all of it. But dedicated items for use, the next slide, on a single patient. Disposable, as whenever possible. Reusable disinfection before use on other patients, all right? Now, this is the CDC guidelines, which is still useful today, all right? So the reference is not given in your slide, but it is the MMWR 2001 50 RR5. Let me repeat, MMWR 2001 50 RR5. Now use it, introduce this in your unit. I'm sure it is used probably very widely in the United States, but other countries, if you have renal dialysis, do use this. They are very standard. Gloves, designated area for medication, you know, and so on and so on. Now, if your infection control unit only introduced this, give education as usual, and then do compliance check. Your renal unit will be delighted. And of course, you should be having surveillance. All infection and classes should be documented. All right? Okay. So there you are. Conclusion. Adopt the new AMI microbiology standards. Eliminate vascular access. Enforce infection control guidelines. And prevent MDRO and hepatitis C. Okay? Now, I think this is the last slide. Very important. It's just a thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Professor Seto, for a very insightful presentation. I'm sure everyone attending this TEDx class will appreciate your wisdom. I have one question for you, and it relates to a number of countries involved in establishing home dialysis for patients. Would you have a few comments to make on this strategy and the issues with infection control when this process has moved from the hospital environment into the home?
Well, I think the principles are the same. All right, now, if they move to the home, I think it's best that they have people looking after them. So those, make sure that the requirement for monitoring is all recorded, you know, the same. They have a book that records it. And then make sure a nurse goes there to teach them hygiene, you know. And also, the if they have machines, the microbiology standards remains the same. All right? It must be collected and done. If they don't do it, it's... In fact, I know some home people admit that it's to their own detriment. All right? So unless all those are done carefully, if they have no people to look after them, it's probably better not to have home dialysis, you know, to come in and have the sessions in the hospital, you know? So that's my comment.
Thank you very much. Have you any additional comments with issues that you think are on the horizon or might appear in the future? You've certainly reinforced the hepatitis C issue, but are there any emerging diseases or emerging pathogens that you think may be an issue in the future?
Well, I think some of the big issues are new vaccines. I think if you have good, like, for instance, the hepatitis B, as you know, all patients should be vaccinated. You know, when they come in, they should be checked and then vaccinated. Now, if they found that if they are not hepatitis B immune, it's now recommended that every month you must check them. Hepatitis C, you should check them every 6 months. All right, so as you can see, we only have 1 hour. There's a whole, if you want to do a course on infection control, you got to give me four or five days maybe to go into all the nitty-gritty. Now, but then, hopefully, hepatitis C and so on, and there are vaccines that will help. Now, if you vaccinate a patient with hepatitis B, for instance, and if he's a responder, then you're okay, you see? And if he's anti-S and anti-C positive, you need to be post-positive, then he's protected, all right? Now, so vaccines, I think, is high on the horizon. Now, there are many new equipments. In fact, this hemofiltration and hemodiafiltration, there are companies coming out that will do the whole thing for you, you know, and they contract you and even provide after service and so on. And this may be becoming big, you see, as it goes along. So this is another thing to keep in mind. Now, it's just that when they contract that to other companies, other countries, like in Hong Kong, for instance, you must make sure that the agent here knows what they're doing. Okay. In fact, there was a very big accident that happens in Hong Kong sometimes back, where the company came to sort of monitor the machine and did something to some of the machines and didn't tell the unit, leading to some very adverse reaction. So I think those are some of the things that are coming. Now, another thing is use of antibiotics is quite important. And in fact, there is no clear guidelines yet on how to handle antibiotics. And this may be something that some societies and units may need to do, you know, because MDRO is definitely found to be much higher in renal patients than others, all right? VRE, for instance, all right? In fact, the early outbreaks of VRE are in renal dialysis units. So this is one of those risk groups that you want to survey and make sure that they comply with whatever policy the hospital has, all right? Anyway, these are just some of the things that comes to mind. I'm sure there are many new things on the horizon. Many new things on the machine I'm not totally familiar with, which, again, as I said, I don't get intimidated. If they come, I read them and just make sure that they follow the routine monitoring.
Thank you very much, Professor Seto. Your insight and knowledge has been much appreciated by all of us attending this telecast. And so thank you very much once again. And thank you. It's now 60 minutes, so I think we'll draw the session to a close.
Yeah.
And I wish to thank the audience for the attendance of the session. I also want to acknowledge that the session has been sponsored by the WHO Patient Safety Challenge, Clean Care is Safer Care. And I also wish to mention that if any of the audience have any questions, these can be sent to Professor Seto via email to info@webertraining.com and or alternatively a speaker directly. And that information is supplied on the introductory slide in your slide set. So thank you very much to you all, and we look forward to the first teleclass for 2013. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.